Thank you so much, Doug. So folks, please feel free to enter your questions. And as you do that, I'll go ahead and get started with the ones that I've got in my queue. And the first one is for you, Nick. And one of our participants is asking, specifically, how do you measure action or inaction regret? What are those survey questions or interview guide questions look like? Do you ask explicitly, or are there some other variables that you get to assess that?
Now, that's a very good question. So in interviews, people tend to refer to these regrets spontaneously, so we don't have to say too much to them. This is how you know, we've come to see the topic, that the topic is relevant to them, because they've, you know, they've mentioned it themselves. Now, in surveys, so far how psychologists have tended to measure regret is with, you know, rather short and not terribly well validated scales. So you can very simply ask someone, how much regret do you expect to experience if you have your child vaccinated with MMR, on a scale from 1 to 5? And this is how most of their research has actually been conducted, including our own research, where regret was just one, was one part of a more complicated picture. As far as I know, the literature to date, there is no single sort of regret scale that's specifically been developed for vaccination research. And all the evidence that I presented is based on sort of one-off questions.
Okay, thank you. A second one for you, Nick, is you mentioned that it could be helpful to have interventions that make people aware that their anticipated vaccination regret is usually greater than their actual regret. So what would those interventions look like?
That, again, that if you look at laboratory research, what tends to happen is that people, one way that people have tried to do this with some success is to get people to experiment with, you know, predicting things in a very short period of time, showing them then that their emotions do not actually follow what their forecasts or their predictions were, and therefore trying to get them to calibrate those judgments and make them lower. One technique, but that's quite laborious and it's quite difficult to achieve. One technique that people have used is to ask people to sort of situate those decisions amongst other things that they're doing in the sort of in their daily lives. So people are provided diaries of all sorts of activities that they're engaged in, and amongst those activities, at some point they're told to they're finding out how a decision went, and they're evaluating it in a context. So providing this context has been shown to lower and calibrate much better those regret forecasts. In a vaccination context, I'm not aware of anyone who's actually actively tried to reduce, to improve, rather, those forecasts to date, and to directly show that lowering them, so reducing the levels of anticipated regret, actually directly translates to improved vaccination uptake. That's the sort of study that is required at the moment. Is along the lines of the studies that Dr. Opel described, really.
Thank you. And Doug, the next question is for you. And it states, it seems there's likely been doctor-patient conversation analysis and other medical issues. Do you know what other findings or things have been learned from conversation analysis regarding effective patient communication that might be applicable to vaccine conversations?
Yeah, great question. So the sociologists that I'm working with have done prior studies in the pediatric setting on other issues, and one that comes to mind is parents bringing their kid in for a sick visit with a cold and looking at their expectations for getting an antibiotic prescription and relating that those expectations of the parents to what the providers are expecting the parents to want for an antibiotic prescription. And it's fascinating, really, the results after videotaping these discussions and analyzing the conversation and the expectations that parents had before and after. It was clear that there was a disconnect between what parents were expecting and what providers were expecting. So, for instance, providers who interpreted a parent's conversation regarding how they were describing their kid and what they were going through, who interpreted that as this parent really wants a prescription, even though I only think this is a cold. And based on that perception, they were more likely to prescribe the kid an antibiotic, even though they didn't need it. Yet that was a misinterpretation on the provider's standpoint. It was related to just how the parent raised certain things and how the provider responded to certain things. So I think it's an emerging technique, qualitative technique, for really understanding more of the subtleties that go on in sort of the usual encounters that we do day in and day out. That I think is just as relevant to the immunization conversations we have. But if you'd like to look more on those other examples, I would, if you have access to PubMed, I mean, the sociologist is John Heritage, and H-E-R-I-T-A-G-E, and you can look at his work. And then he specifically collaborated with Rita Mangione-Smith, a general pediatrician who looked at this antibiotic issue in the primary care setting. So if you'd like to look at that, you can probably access those articles on PubMed.
Thank you, Doug. We also have a question regarding the availability of the toolkit you talked about, Doug. Is that available for people? And if so, where can they find that?
So it's not currently available because we're in the midst of testing it, and to avoid contamination of results, even though it seems unlikely since our intervention is really confined to the Puget Sound area, it's still been a decision by the research team to sort of limit dissemination of these this toolkit until we are done with the testing. But once the testing is done, and hopefully having shown a positive outcome, we'll certainly disseminate them. But regardless of the outcome, they'll be available. The owner of this toolkit currently is the Group Health Research Institute, and a collaboration with our Immunization Action Coalition, namely the Within Reach group. So just stay tuned. In the next year, we should be able to communicate more about the results and how we'll disseminate the materials. But I apologize, they can't be made available currently.
Thank you. And we're almost to the top of the hour, but one more question for you, Doug. You suggested a standardized communication approach is missing and needed. Do you know of a health or medical topic or issue where physicians have a standardized communication approach?
Well, I mean, it's a very good question, and you certainly, I mean, I think it's certainly legitimate. What of our communication task in a well-child visit or any encounter with a patient are standardized? And, you know, I think there's, I mean, that's an interesting question, and I think there are very few where we actually expect providers to do the same thing when encountering a patient with a certain problem every time. And it raises the question, do we need a standard approach? And I still, even though there's probably not a lot of examples where we do standardize our communication approach, in this circumstance, I think because the evidence is so overwhelmingly in favor of this being an intervention that's good and that will not only improve individual health but public health, and there's such a emerging evidence of disparate approaches that, frankly, because we don't know what is effective, I think only more evidence only will be helpful in potentially not making sure everybody does it the same, but at least allowing people who are having these conversations to point to certain things that might work better than others. And so maybe the outcome, as this question might suggest, is not to make sure everybody's doing it the same way, but just to augment the evidence base so that people have more reason to do one thing over the other.
I think that's a great answer to a, like you said, very good question. We are at the top of the hour. I want to thank both Drs. Sivdalis and Opel for being on today. Thank you all for joining us, and hope you enjoy the rest of our first ever online conference. Thanks, everybody.